You're listening to the Top Woman Business Unusual Podcast. Now, the Top Woman Business Unusual Podcast. Learn from the greatest minds in business today. Interviews hosted by Ralph Fletcher. Learn how to improve business, get tips from industry leaders, and be motivated by real life experience. Top Woman Business Unusual.
Welcome everybody to the Standard Bank Top Woman Podcast. Today I am delighted to have Aisha Baker with me. She has been described as the alpha example of social media player who goes beyond blogging. She is a podcaster, a blogger, an entrepreneur of Baked Online, a mother, and married to another celebrity, Wayne. Mm-hmm. So, Aisha, I think the first thing I want to ask you is, how would you describe yourself? Because there's a lot of different descriptions that I've yeah, as well, exactly. As an award winner, by the way, Cosmopolitan Influencer of the Year in 2018. I mean, there was a long page of detail that I had, but I had to cut it short.
Yeah, I think I had all those things, but I don't know how I would define myself now. At the moment, I'm like a breastfeeding extraordinaire because I've just had a baby. But yeah, I'm all those things. But I think mostly I want to be considered as an entrepreneur, because there's a huge entrepreneurial portion of being an influencer that people don't quite understand. Mm. And they only understand it once they have to do it for a certain part of their job, you know. And I think a lot of the time with models too, they've now had to be both.
Yeah.
And it's like you have to be so full on all the time. It's very hard to describe that job, but I think it's entrepreneurial for sure, because you're not going to get deals if you're not very savvy.
What came first, the influencer, the entrepreneurial side as a result of you being an influencer, and now that's where more of the passion and drive is coming from?
Yeah, so I started out as a blogger when I was 18. I just had a lot of feelings and things to say at that age. And then I'd left an all-girls school and I went straight to university, and all my friends did a gap year. So it was like a big change for me, and I wanted to like write all out. So I had a blog that was more about my feelings than about like fashion or anything. And then some of my friends on campus was like, oh, you should post your outfits on your blog. So, okay, I'll do that. And I was one of the first, I think, 5 bloggers that I knew of in Cape Town, and definitely the first few to monetize it. I had a very smart lecturer. His name is Dave Duarte, and he did a course with us on social media marketing back when I was at uni. And I showed him that I had like 3,000 followers, which is a lot at that time. And he was like, oh, you should totally monetize this. And he kind of gave me a few tips. I don't even think he remembers me, but he like changed my life. So I started monetizing it very soon after that. And then it kind of evolved, and I became entrepreneurial because I had to, because I was like working with brands like Woolworths and for vouchers, eh? We didn't get paid. We were getting vouchers. I was like, I'm so rich, I can go to Woolworths and buy anything I want. and then, you know, I had to learn how to do my taxes and like all that kind of stuff. So then it was like becoming an accidental entrepreneur. And then social media kicked off after that, and we had to kind of be influencers. And that was like a new thing for me, because being a blogger was very different to being an influencer.
I wanted to ask this because I was having a meeting with my PR agency last week. We spoke about influencers, and it seems to be thrown around very loosely. And I'm not sure, and I'd love for you to just give us a proper description or a context of how you really see it. Because I think people are misguided by what it is. And it's a very, like I said, a very loose term that's sort of thrown around. How would you describe what is an influencer?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. You know, if you ask me what was a blogger, it would be so easy. Like we spoke about real things that mattered to us. But the influencer world is very diverse. There's, you know, various forms of influential people. You get influential people who influence you to buy. So the consumer side of things, you know, there are those people that you follow and you'll buy the camera that they talk about or the cream that they talk about. Then you'll get like the more social driven influence. So influences you to, you know, care about the planet or maybe go vegan or just certain changes in your life. And then you get like, I don't know what I would describe myself to be, but I'd say more inspirational. So I'm like a bit of both. And there's, I really think we're at a stage now in society where everybody's influential and we all influencers. It's like the movement from word of mouth marketing has moved to online and like everybody's an influencer. I get influenced by friends to buy things all the time and like reviews by regular people, not people with loads of followers. So yeah. I think this influencer term is going to fall away in the next few years, just like bloggers fell away. And yeah. I don't know what the next word is going to be, but it's definitely going to change because there's so many of us now. It's honestly so oversaturated. Anyone can be an influencer. But I think what's more interesting to people is how do you become an influencer gets paid on the level that I'm getting paid. And that's what people really want to know about. They always want to know about the money. Like, you know, how do I get paid more? That is something that's different. There's not a lot of us, especially in South Africa, who get, you earn a living, a proper living where you can buy a house, not like a cute money that we used to earn, like the vouchers that I told you about. So that kind of level of influential is difficult to get to. It requires much more effort, much more strategic thinking.
What would you say is the point where, you know, like when do you know or you decide that you've gone from an amateur status to this professional sort of influencer, like you said, where you can buy a house and you can start planning a future or any of those things? Like what is the defining moment there?
The turning point. Okay. So the turning point for me, I think, was definitely when I started thinking more strategically. So approaching my brand, I'm separate to the, like Baked Online is separate to Aisha, the person. So if you meet me in person, I'm a little bit different to how I am online. My online persona is very strategic now. There's multiple factors, and that's the turning point is when I approached it as a strategy, not as just like posting for sport. And using my strategic marketing skills, because I study marketing in my business, which is the influencer side, it's still the more profitable side of my business. I also own a fashion label. Anyone who owns a fashion label knows that that is not profitable, not locally anyway. We're still getting there. The more profitable side is the influencer side. And a lot of that, it's got to do with understanding your audience and what you're giving them, approaching content creation as a magazine would. So with a personal touch. So knowing that my audience not only sees themselves in me, they're making buying decisions based on what I share and what I talk about. That's not only a big responsibility, but also you need to approach that with caution. So what we do is when we're posting content, we're not always posting sponsored content. We've now tailored brands that we work with. We've tapered them so that they fit different categories, whether that's cooking. It's like a full lifestyle brand. Cooking, fashion, babies, everything. And tapering that with organic content, which is what the magazine would do. The magazine does advertorials, and then they post real think pieces in the articles. And that's what we want to do on the page as well. So when I'm writing from a perspective of my audience, not only myself. So I'm sharing my story with an intention or a goal. And that's the strategic portion of it. And whether that's wanting to talk about, you know, this, I told you I just had a baby, so I'm very much in that baby zone. Yeah. And we spoke about breastfeeding awareness a couple of weeks ago. And that conversation was so important to my audience because they're very much in the same phase of life as me. Whether they can relate to having had a baby previously or thinking about having a baby, they're all kind of in that phase. So we approached that topic, you know, rewriting the caption and really thinking about what is the messaging behind this article, even though it's just a caption. What do we want to evoke? What kind of response do you want? And then when we're doing promotional content after that, it feels more meaningful to our audience because they're not only getting adverts, they're getting something more, some sort of inspiration or motivation. They're learning something. So that's what we want to offer on the page. It's not just seen as like, oh, let me post cute pictures of myself or looking good or pictures of my kids, like that also it plays a role, but it's not the only thing. So previously when I'd first started, it was all about looking good, being beautiful, being put together, but it's moved on a little bit and I approach it more like a magazine. And then the other side of that is client services, which is so important to us and retaining our clients throughout the years. I've had clients that have worked with me for 10 or 12 years. And we keep them happy and we build that relationship. And that's probably the hardest side of being an influencer, for a paid influencer. And running my business the way I do is maintain client relationships and getting them to understand that we know what our audience wants and do a little bit of pushback. So it's a full-time job. It's a 9-to-5. It's not, I mean, sometimes it's a 24-hour job. It's not just about posting anymore. So if there is anyone out there who wants to take it a little bit more seriously, I think the main thing is asking yourself whether you're willing to put this much effort into it and whether you're willing to think strategically. I approach my business as a magazine editor would, and it's dealing with clients and it's dealing with the audience.
I wanted to tuck into that a bit more because I've watched one of your talks that you did at Cosmo, and you mentioned relationships are really important. And I mean, how do you harness and manage your relationships? What are the kinds of things that the principles that you set that you are guided by?
Yeah, so on both sides of the business, whether it's dealing with the customers on the fashion side or our clients on the marketing side, the influencer side, and the audience side, we approach it like any relationship with you in your life. So it's like a little bit of give and take. Recently, we've also realized that we give a bit too much, so now we've had to pull back. So what that means is, you know, checking in with our clients. Once a year, at the beginning of the year, we check in, we set up an entirely new package and send it to everybody that we've worked with in the past couple of years. We have a database of all of our clients. That's agencies, brands, PR agencies, advertising agencies, whoever we've worked with. We send them our package in the beginning of the year, and that's with our prices and what's changing this year. So that's a lot of intention setting, you know, in the previous year. So what topics we'll be covering, whether that's motherhood, family, fashion, we all weight each of the topics. So because I had a baby now, obviously motherhood's at the top tier and fashion follows that because I have a fashion label. And then we also give clients ideas of where to plug in. So if you're working with a laundry detergent brand, we plug them into the journey story behind my fashion brand. So it's that constant tie in my audience likes, which is like everything sort of fits together. So we don't separate those relationships. We keep them in one sort of puzzle. And then, I mean, it's a lot of schmoozing, which a lot of people are not willing to. It's brown nosing. It's calling and wishing people happy birthday and emailing them and checking in with clients, WhatsApping them, being like, hey, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you. How are the kids? Like, it's that kind of stuff that I don't think any of my peers do that. And I learned that from working in an agency, in a PR agency. I worked in an agency for 3 months after I had my son. I had a fake name. My name was Michelle, if anyone got emailed by me. And I would, that's what my boss at the time taught me, is like, you have to check in with people and make sure they remember you and remember that you're out there and getting that buy-in, the same buy-in you want from your followers, you want from your clients too. And it's a little bit of just extra care, TLC, the same thing you would do with your partner, you know, just checking in and remembering that there's a person on the other side of the campaign. Then on the flip side of that, I was telling you about us having to, you know, pull back a bit. Sometimes our clients take advantage of us, you know, asking for extras or, yeah, expecting very, like, turning up time. We've had to laugh a few clients in the last year. And I can be nice, but I can also be hard if I need to be. Just an example of that is like one of our clients kept changing the content. And eventually I had to be like, listen, like, this is my profession. I know what I'm doing. So if you change this one more time, we're going to charge you a penalty because we can't have our guys coming out shooting content, us getting ready. It takes hours to produce things. So it's either you go with this or you don't. And there was another one that was like gender exclusive, which is not something I buy into. We were advertising something and they kept referring to like women and making the product very female centric. And I personally felt that it wasn't a female product. So I'm like, why are we not addressing people? Like it was Pride Month and everything was about like this, like gender conforming stuff. And it was just like making me feel really uncomfortable. And I said, like, you know, I don't feel comfortable posting the kind of stuff that excludes an entire community. So either you come to the party and you say, you accept what I want to say, or we don't work together. I mean, we'd be happy to refund clients if they don't want to come to the party. And I think that's also something you have to think about.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, because you, and I get the sense that you've either, and I want to know if you've developed it or if it's come very naturally, but you're quite brave in your approach from you know, when you started out to asking for certain things, picking up the phone, trying to get into events, you know, you hustled. And is that something that you learned, or is that something you've always had as part of your nature?
I think it's a learned behavior. Both my parents are entrepreneurs. My dad's very much a hustler. I mean, even getting us into the schools here in Cape Town, I went to a very prestigious school called St. Cyprian's, and I couldn't get in at first. It's a private school, and you know, my dad's like a very dark-skinned colored man. He's not, and he's self-made, so he didn't feel he belonged, but he definitely went there and begged for a place. So he always says, like, he sat there for 2 weeks and he's like, you're gonna let my daughter come to the school, please, like, I've worked really hard, I want a year. So I've got that tenacity, I think, from my father. He doesn't take no for an answer. So I saw that from a young age. I'm actually quite a shy person. No one believes me when I say this. I'm an introvert. I don't like putting myself out there. So it takes a lot of conversations. My friend calls it staff meetings with yourself. So I have these staff meetings with myself. Like, you can do this. Let's go for it. I mean, it's like I'm even sweating talking about the experience of putting yourself out there, like being brave and saying, like, hey, I want to work with Woolworths, and I'm happy to get rejected. I mean, Woolworths rejected me many times. Even now, I get rejected all the time. I will pitch to clients, and they're like, no, you don't fit the brand. And then I get pissed off. I get upset. I'm like emotional. Like, why don't they like me? But it's about accepting that rejection. It doesn't mean that I'm good enough. So it's having those conversations with myself. Like, this doesn't mean you're not good enough. It just means that now is not the time.
And I think
that bravery is definitely something I've learned.
And I think the perception from other people is that, oh, yeah, you're an influencer. You know, any door's open to you. And they don't have these challenges that I do or these fears that I do. And I find this, you know, I often talk to women who have been successful, and it's nothing of the above. It's very much a learned practice and having that self-talk of dealing with rejection. But I just wanted to say about your father, one of my favorite bits of doing some background research was actually listening to your podcast with him, and the fact that you're arguing about what Cook Sisters are, spicy or sweet. And but it seems, and the fact that, you know, I'm just like, anyone who's listening, for them to go and listen to your podcast. It's Baked, right?
Yes, Baked the Podcast.
Baked the Podcast. And really, he, from the sense of kind of his background and what I could understand from the conversations you were having, he seems like he has a very strong presence in terms of this entrepreneurial flair that you have and are driving. So, yeah, I just wanted to say I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, my mom's also like a big part of our lives, because my dad is very brave, and I think he's experienced a lot of, you know, pushback from being so brave, that he is not always keen for us to be this brave. Like, I don't think he gets very scared, like, of what we will feel. So when I go for something, he often wants to be like, no, like, don't do it, like, it's too risky or whatever. Whereas my mom, on the other hand, who isn't as much of a risk taker, she'll be like, no, one of my favorite things that she said to me as a young woman or a young girl even was, if you wanted, it's yours, just take it. And it plays in my mind sometimes when I doubt myself, like, just go, just take it. It's yours. It's there. Like, you are the only one holding yourself back. And I used to ask my mom, like, about certain amounts of money, like, could I earn this amount of money? And it's such a joke to think about it now, because it's like literally the most minimal amount of money. And she'd be like, yeah, if you want that, you can have it. And I'm like, okay. And it's just matter of fact. So I often say to my friends now, one of my friends just started her own business, and I'm like, you know, it's there, just take it. We are our own worst enemy. You have all the doubt in your mind. And I mean, what's the worst that could happen is that you fail. So go to that place of like how bad it feels to fail, and then you'll come out of it.
Speaking of failure, it's one of my favorite questions and insights about people. I absolutely love it, because I think it's always such a big learning curve. But what would you consider some of your biggest failures or obstacles that you've had to overcome on this journey?
Okay, you have got loads. I've started many brands and not launched them. Like, I've conceptualized them and like, so one of it is Baked Beauty. I spent like a year conceptualizing this beauty brand and like flying up to Joburg, having meetings, putting products together, like spent loads of money doing research. And I mean, Baked Beauty doesn't exist. You've never seen it. So it never ever got off the ground. We couldn't get it together. And one of my competitors ended up doing a beauty brand and like got it together so quickly. And that was a lot. I don't know if anyone listening to this compares themselves to other people, but there was a big like punch in the face for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, like I've worked on this for so long and I couldn't get there. And I felt really like let down about it, because I'm like, I really wanted this thing, and I put in all the work. I did all the right things. I hired the right people. And it didn't come together for us. And then so getting over that was quite a big obstacle, because I wanted to launch Baked Collection all along, and I'd chosen to go with the beauty brand first. I think partially because of like the success of celebrity beauty brands overseas, I thought I could do it. I thought I could make it happen. It's a very different landscape in South Africa. And I'd gone to LA and I saw like how easy things were there, and I was like, oh, I could totally do this. And if I could go back, I would rather launch the clothing collection. It's more my expertise anyway, because I worked in fashion. I worked for the Fashini Group for a little bit, and I ran an embroidery factory. My grandmother's been sewing my whole life, so I know more about fashion, know more about garments. I have a better team. So like, if I could go back, like that's the one thing I would literally change. It's like, I would tell myself like, no, leave this beauty thing. Lipsticks are done. Just go and make fashion. I put off launching Baked Collection because of it. And I only ended up launching last year on the 1st of July during COVID. Worst I've launched anything. And I literally went for, I mean, I had so much anxiety launching this brand because of the failure of the beauty products that never came to. And I planned Baked Collection for 5 years before launching it. And I wish I just launched it 5 years earlier. So that was a major, major, major setback for me. And then not a failure, it's a blessing. I had my son, but after having him, I decided to quit everything. And I was like, I'm not going to work anymore. And I want to be a stay-at-home mom. I thought that's what I wanted. And I quit the Influencer Vibes. I sent emails to everyone saying like, okay, I'm done. Like, thank you so much for supporting me, like the whole thing. And that felt like a little bit of a failure, because I think maybe a month afterwards, I decided that I made a mistake and I wanted to continue working. And I had to like pick up my career like from nothing again. It took me like maybe 6 or 7 months. That's when I worked secretly in the agency to make some money. I then had to pick and restart everything. Like, I had this very fruitful career, and that felt like a failure. I mean, it wasn't in the end. It made me really strong. But picking that up again was like so hard. Trying to beg people to work me, drop my prices completely, like 70%.
Wow.
Working basically for free again. If anyone worked with me in that time, they really got a bargain because I was really working for nothing. Just trying to get my name back out there. So yeah, that was also hard.
And that's just after what, 1 month of leaving the spotlight?
And well, it was about 6 months in total. I'd left for 6 months.
And right.
Then we started. Yeah.
And in all of this, like, you know, in the spotlight itself, I mean, how you seem very grounded, and I know that, you know, you come across or you want to just be you, but how do you avoid that lingering things getting to your head, it getting to that point where, you know, you're compromising yourself or not being the person you want to be? I mean, have you come across those instances and how have you dealt with them?
Yeah, I think before I had my son, I'd always experienced anxiety my whole life. It's so funny because my mom was like, oh, yeah, you've had anxiety since you were 8 years old. I'm like, did you ever think to tell me this?
I don't think that's what it was really then.
No, it's just like, you know, like when kids had ADHD and they were just like, oh, it's a little bit hyper, like getting on outside. So I had anxiety as a kid and I never knew that there wasn't a term for it for me. And then when I had my son, I had a little bit of a mental breakdown after having him. Just that pressure of like my job, and I was pregnant with him and I started seeing it happening. The pressure of being like always on and always perfect and like projecting this image. And then I had gone through like a postnatal depression and I posted about it like while it was happening in real time. And at that time, I still had my audience had full access to me, so they could direct message me. And that's like a complete disaster because there's like a lot of very cruel people online, or they'll direct message you really mean stuff. So I just like, I had a complete breakdown, and that's when I decided to quit. And I think through that, I learned how to ground myself. So it's just like boundary setting and setting certain boundaries for my mental health. Because I would fully lose my mind now if I opened any of the DMs that I get. I closed off my DMs recently again. I'd had them open to a few people. And then if I find things triggering, I don't respond. And I try and ask myself, which is a lot of work that I've done, like in therapy, where I ask myself, like, why does this comment trigger me? What does it mean? And I like have this whole like journey that I go through like a step by step. So I've learned that I can't have my audience have full access to me. I've had to close off my direct messages. I've had to set boundaries with clients who WhatsApp me like all the time. And a lot of my clients become very, very big supporters of me, which I love. But then the lines get a little bit blurred and they think they can WhatsApp me at midnight on a Sunday, and that's not okay. So, so setting boundaries is a main thing. And then also knowing when to slow down. So for my pregnancy now, I've also just, you know, when I was pregnant with my son, I shot the Cosmo cover for 15 hours, over 2 days. It was 15 hours day one, 15 hours day two, with one meal on each. Yeah, it was a cover and a feature inside. And we only ate one meal on both of those days. And like I don't know why I allowed that kind of, I mean, like ludicrous. I think I was in heels all day. I was 5 months pregnant and I pushed myself to the limits. And now I'm not willing to do that anymore. And I've learned how to communicate that in a very kind way. Like, these are my limits and I can't go past them. Especially now with maternity leave, taking leave. And my clients didn't understand that. They're like, you're an influencer, you can't take leave. And I'm like, no, I'm not working. I mean, it was a lot of pushback. We had one of my clients actually said to me, some of us have to work even when we're on leave. And I was like, some of us are going to take a break. So it's knowing to take a break as well. Because if you don't take a break, you can mentally break down. And with the nature of this job, often that breakdown is public. And you find yourself, you know, attacking people online, and it's all a very emotional response. And I've been there. I've been like completely hated on Twitter before for saying the wrong thing, or I've said the wrong thing many times because I respond from an emotional place. So for now, it's like trying to go back inward and like taking social media breaks if I need to, unfollowing triggering accounts, One of the boundaries that I've set is like I'm willing to comment or engage with my audience in the comment section, but not privately. That's really helped because it means people can't really be that mean. And if they are mean in the comments, it's very, very rarely. I mean, I can just delete it and it's not, it doesn't affect me. It's those private conversations that get, that trigger you. So it's not for the faint of heart. Look, I mean, there are times when you literally want to say like the meanest stuff to people when they are mean to you. But it's also maintaining that that relationship again. Like you don't know who's on the other side and what they're going through as well. Like I've been to court before for, I think that's what changed me probably, going to court with someone who was trolling me online.
Wow.
And I was dead set on like suing this woman and I'm like, I'm going to sue her. She's like defamation of character, everything. I had my lawyer go with me. And when I was there and I was listening to this woman's life story, like it was honestly so, so sad and so dark. Like I understood why she was doing what she was doing. Like I was able to like kind of have empathy for her. And then I dropped the case because I was like, we ended up sorting it out. I just, like I told her how I felt in front of the magistrate. And the magistrate was really harsh. I mean, most people don't know this, but if you defame someone online, it's like harassment. So you can go to jail. And she told this woman, like, this was her second case of trolling someone online. She was being sued at the same time as me by somebody else.
Wow.
And the magistrate told her, like, if you come in here a third time, I'm putting you in prison with rapists and murderers. And that's like, that's the power of like, no, people don't know this. Like you can really get into serious trouble.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, like this woman's had such a hard life. Like I don't want to be the person who puts her in jail. Like it's just like, I didn't want to do that. And then it changed me. It changed how I see bullies and trolls online. And now I'm able to deal with the pressures of my job much better.
And the places that they're coming from are more than likely from a place of hurt or pain or whatever. Not that that's not that right or acceptable, but it sounds to me, you know, you speak about like having therapy and those sorts of things. Like how do you create like your strong supporting environment? I mean, do you have like people who people throw around the mentor, it means different things, different people, but like coaches or like what practices do you have in your supporting environment to help you grow, especially as you're now going onto this more entrepreneurial focused route?
So I love having a mentor. I'm a huge fan of mentorship. So one of my manufacturers was my mentor when I worked at the Vashini Group. And then she started her own business and we work together now. So I always consider her, it's very informal, but when I go and I have my manufacturing meetings, we have like a 30-minute discussion about our lives. She's married with two kids and that's where I wanted to be, similar to where she is. And I can often lean on her for advice from a working mother perspective. Mm-hmm. And then the other people as well, one of the agencies I work with, the owner, Nicola, now mentored me just for three sessions from a business perspective. And she changed the way I view my business. And because I was having serious cash flow issues. And I had asked her one day when I just bumped into her and I was like, you know what, I'm going to email you. Like, I really need help. And I just reached out to her and she met with me three times. And she helped me just like consolidate my cash flow and see where I was spending too much money in the business. And it actually happened to be something I was really passionate about, which was another failure, was my project called Millennial Mama. It was like a seminar for moms. And it was supposed to be this really cool concept that I came up with when I was in England with my husband. I'd seen it there and I was like, oh, this is so awesome. It's like baby seminars, but cool. And I was like, so many moms would want to come to this. No one wanted to come to that. It was like the worst business. And it took so much money out of the business. And then she was like, you know, sometimes you're passionate about something and you have to give up on it. And I had to give up on that project. So she really helped me in that way. That was the second person I would say is a huge mentor to me in life. And then something I'm really passionate about is my mental health. I do feel like as a colored woman, we are not taught about mental health growing up. It's just like, oh, you need to, like, I'm also Muslim. It's like, just pray and things will be fine. Like, you just need to pray and you'll be okay. Or like a lot of the time when you're like, oh, go for a walk or like go for a run, you'll be fine. I do believe in exercise and I do believe in prayer, but I think it's, no one teaches you how to like do all of that and like feel better. So someone that I worked with over the last 18 months is a life coach. Her name is Melissa. She started with diets and then she kind of became my life coach. We'd have these weekly meetings where we discuss, you know, the pressures of my job and where to kind of find the sweet spot. So for me, that is going for a walk. It's meditating. I'm very spiritual. So like I sage my house and I like take those moments out for myself to like have like a full cleanse and like a cleanse of my mind. It's taking breaks from social media. And then something that really changed my life, which I recommend to every single person, is starting a grateful journal. So there's an app called Grateful on the app store. I'm a huge fan of apps, so everything's on my phone. I don't have like a physical journal. And I started journaling in there, and there's prompts that talk about like, you know, post, like write about a song that you're grateful for that changed your life. It's like such a small thing, but listening to this one song could have changed your day. And then just saying like, I'm grateful for this musician for making the song because it made me feel this way. It really changed my way of thinking. So there's, I mean, I'm into crystals and all that kind of stuff as well. So it's a combination of lots of stuff for me. And then my personal support structure in terms of my family and girlfriends. I have a very tight circle of girlfriends. We actually call ourselves the witches. We say that we never sit down and have a conversation. We always stand around like a little pot, basically talking. And there's that like group of girls that I can really be honest with and vent to. And they hold space for me and I hold space for them. So that's a huge support for me because I don't know about other women. I don't know if they can relate, but the kind of lifestyle I have, it's like, you know, with the kids and work and being married, it can get very intense. And you often feel lonely and as if no one gets it. And then you find those like two or three friends who like completely know how you feel. And I think those relationships are very important. It's like you can really be yourself and just like complain. And I don't really complain in my life, only in that one WhatsApp group. It's like you'll find my list of, my list of complaints. So yeah, like I said, it's like a big, there's like a whole lot of stuff that makes me feel grounded. It's not just one specific thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds very holistic. So, I mean, we're coming sort of to the end of our chat, and I could probably ask you a million more questions. I am a note taker on physical paper, and I've got about 8 pieces of paper sprawled out here.
That's amazing. I hate my handwriting.
Do you?
I'm such a visual person that my handwriting irritates me, so then I just want
to. It doesn't feel the same for me writing feelings or thoughts on tech. It has to be handwritten, and then it gets transferred over. I've tried it. I've done the whole diary thing. I had an operation and did the whole journal on tech, and it did work. And I actually, it's something that you can always keep, which is nice. It actually stays with you, whereas your notes, I'm flying all over the place all the time. But I mean, you're going to speak at the Top Woman Conference in October, and I just, you know, I don't know if you've got a topic yet or what you're going to talk about, but I just wanted to, you know, I suppose women empowerment has become a very important thing for us in this country. And it's probably one of the only places in the world that you have a full month celebrating women. I'm working with a UK company at the moment and I told them about a woman's month and they were very, very surprised. And, you know, so I found that quite interesting that for such an advanced first world country versus where we are, that we're kind of much more up there in terms of accelerating gender empowerment and it being on the forefront. But besides from that, I just wanted to know what is it that you would like, you know, what are you wanting to achieve? What impact are you, you know, do you want to have in terms of women and women in business or you know, in that area?
It's so interesting that you asked this question because I had a meeting with some of the guys that we work with in our production side. And we were talking about like content directives after my birth of my daughter. We had a little meeting And I think the main thing that I think the world needs now is like more purposeful content. So that's something that I'm committed to, is like, even in our brand partnerships, like it needs to be purposeful and meaningful. We're not just doing things for money or to promote a product. Like that product needs to come on board and support us. And like if I'm working with, you know, there's a diaper brand that I'm working with, and I've asked them quite a few times to get involved with a charity that I'm very passionate about, who donates nappies and wipes and stuff to mothers on the Cape Flats. Like, it's like, we want to work with you, but you need to also give back and show us how you're doing that and kind of create that thread. Even in the clothing brand, we just, for Women's Month, we just partnered up with a few other female brands, and we all donated 5% of our profits to a nonprofit organization that helps women who want to improve their lives, especially after cases of gender-based violence. And then Rape Crisis is someone that we work closely with just to educate ourselves on what's currently going on in the country and how we can assist, whether that's financially or using our voice. You know, as much as the country is forward thinking, and there's so many of us who are committed to moving the needle when it comes to women empowerment, we also live in a country that's got like the worst gender-based violence rates in the entire world. So it's like, how do you have this very polarized experience, mm-hmm. and what can we do to change that? And I think it's like doing small little things and helping out where you can. For example, we're very committed to working with 90% women in our business. So that means like the women who make our clothes, the women that manufacture for us, the consultants, the agencies we work with. We actually like work with barely any men, besides our production team. And so we committed to, you know, empowering women on the ground level, not just as a concept on social media, it's like in our business too. And whether that's supporting our charities, and we don't always like advertise who we support. We want to do it like very intentionally and from our core. And that's something I want to keep doing throughout, you know, the growth of the business. It's just like spreading that purpose. And you'll notice there's a change in our content online as well, like very thoughtful captions and trying to really connect with women, because that's the bulk of my audience. And also make other genders understand the experience of like a woman in South Africa and what she goes through. I've been working on a piece on maternity leave for the past 2 months. It's literally one post, but it takes so long to write because I want to say the right thing. And South Africa is actually very forward-thinking when it comes to maternity leave. We're one of the only countries where it's illegal to work after you've had a baby for 6 weeks. So no company can ask you to work for the first 6 weeks of after your birth, which is very, very forward-thinking. Like it's
including influencers and freelancers.
Yes, and I've actually sent that to my clients, and I said like it's six, like I'm not even 6 weeks out. We get 4 months maternity leave. I mean, we have UIF that supports unemployed women with maternity benefit. There's so many things we still need to do, like, you know, but that's really like important. We are on a good trajectory, and as a business. My business is called Baked Media. We want to work towards being a part of that change and making those changes, whether it's writing letters to government. And so Rape Crisis helps us a lot with that kind of knowledge, because it's not possible to know everything, you know. Like, where can we make an impact, not only in a social media, from a social media perspective, but in our business as a whole. So that's, I think, for the next 10 years, is we want to work towards being like, walking the talk, is that what it's called? Yeah, you want to walk the talk.
I always get these things backwards myself, so
I know. I'm so bad at idioms.
My partner calls them Carlaisms, so there's a whole notebook on those as well. I just want to tap into a little bit of the future. What are we looking forward to in terms of your entrepreneurship journey? What are you learning at the moment? Like, what's apart from motherhood, which is obviously a big part of the influence of what is inspiring your moves?
So right now we run my business from my home. We're trying to move into an office space. So that's our short-term goal. Hopefully that happens before Christmas. And then once we move into an office space, we'd like to expand the clothing collection. So there'll be more of a push on my online platforms around my clothing range. We want to expand our size curve. We want to expand our styles, and then introducing menswear and kids and starting to wholesale. So just basically expanding that business. Now that we've got such a nice audience, and hopefully international shipping will happen soon. So there's a huge focus on bait collection for the next 5 years. I am dialing back on the influencer side because, like I said, we want to do more meaningful content, and that means not taking on as many clients. So now we're signing long-term contracts with very few brands and people that unfold over the next few years. So that's what I'm focused on doing. So we can really add that meaningful touch to our content and then focus mostly on bait collection. And then, I've got so many ideas. It's just about like reeling them in at this stage because, I can go on and on. I want to launch a coffee brand. I want to do so many things. But what I learned from failing at baked beauty was that not every idea needs to be, like sometimes you can just flesh out an idea.
Yeah,
and just enjoy the like concept and leave it there, you know. And I often do that. That's one thing I do write down is ideas. I don't put them in my phone. I'll write that down on a piece of paper and flesh out like an entire brand. And then I'm like, let it go.
Sometimes once you've dreamed about something, it's almost like you've lived it when you've like created it. And then by the time you've got to do it, you're like, okay, well, I don't really need to do it now. I can just like, it was a nice dream.
Yeah, the amount of times I've designed furniture also. Like one of my friends has a furniture manufacturing company. And I always design furniture and send him my ideas. He's like, so are we ever doing baked furniture? I'm like, no, I just need to like get this out of my head.
Very creative. Well, Aisha, it's been so, so lovely to chat to you. And I'm going to let you get back to your busy life and your beautiful family. And like, also thank you so much for chatting to us. I know you've got a lot on your plate with a 2-month-old and a three and a half year old and everything that's going on. That's probably the busiest part of life at the moment.
So
really appreciate you taking the time. And I think it's going to be lovely for people to just, listen to what you've got to say around life in general. Guys, we're going to, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say, any leaving comments?
I think my leaving comments are definitely follow us online at Baked Online and at Baked Collection. And stay tuned. We've got lots coming up, and I hope that you guys enjoy this chat with us.
Thank you, Aisha.